Okay, Parshas Shmos, beginning of our second Sefer. Page 300, we'll pick up in the middle of our story, the few psukim that I'd like to study this morning. excuse me. Alright, the point where I'd like to pick up is we've already been introduced to the Jewish people in servitude.
I'm sorry, I'm just cutting this off.
We've been introduced to Moshe, who's already grown up in the house of Paro. He's, of course, you know, been sent in his basket, and he's been found by the daughter of Paro. Grew up in the home of Paro. Discovers that he is a Jew, and he goes out and he sees the two incidents. First, it's actually three consecutive incidents. First, he sees a Mitzri beating up on a Jew, and he kills the Mitzri. Then he sees two Jews fighting. And the Jews say to him, when he tries to intervene, are you going to kill us the way that you killed him? So he realizes that the matter is known, and he flees to Midian. And immediately upon getting to Midian, he runs into the daughters of Yisro, who are shepherding their flock, and they're having trouble with some other non-Jewish people. So the three incidents that we have in consecutive succession, the non-Jew versus Jew, Jew versus Jew, non-verse versus non-Jew versus non-Jew, and all three, Moshe steps in to intervene and do what he can. He is brought into Yisro's home, marries one of his daughters, and has a son. That's where we're up to. That's the whole background of the part of the story where we're up to. Moshe is now Adam and Mitzrayim and Midian, already married with a child, as our story will continue. We are now going to learn three psukim. You'll see it's its own little paragraph on the top of page 300 and 301, which bridges the story that we've had so far, the Jews in servitude and all the problems that they're having, Moshe's birth, Moshe's being raised in the house of Paro and subsequently fleeing, and then the beginning of Perek Gimel, the third chapter you see, is the beginning of the burning bush and Moshe being sent back to redeem them. So there's a three-verse interlude in between the story that we're up to so far where Moshe flees and then when Moshe is introduced to Hashem, and he's sent back to redeem the Jewish people. That is the context. Okay. Let's read. Three psukim. Ready? Pasuk Chaf Gimel 23. Vayhi bayamim harabim haheim. It was during those many days. Bayamim harabim haheim. Many days. Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim. The king of Egypt died. Vayeonchu v'nei Yisrael min ha'avuda. Vayizaku. And the children of Israel groaned because of the hard work, and they cried out. Pasuk says in straightforward English, during this many day period of time, the king dies, and the Jewish people cry out from their difficult work. Vata'al shavasam elho elokim min ha'avodah. And their outcry because of the work went up to Hashem. Chavdalad vayishma elokim esna akasam. Hashem heard their moaning. Vayizkor elokim es briso es Avraham es Yitzchak ves Yaakov. And Hashem remembered the covenant that he had made with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, vayeda Elokim. Hashem saw the children of Israel, and Hashem knew. Those are the three psukim. Let's work them through as we've become accustomed to do. The difficulties, what parts of these psukim need further clarification, what are just downright difficulties, questions. Let's first summarize in our own words in a line or two what's being said. What are these three verses saying? And in the most concise kernel, what is being said in these three verses? How would you phrase it?
Their whole life had changed. Now they were working hard work, and they prayed to God.
I'm gonna cut you. You're adding more things that are even said. Yeah. I want the most concise kernel of what is said here.
They cry out to God.
Sure. Excellent. Right. The Jewish people cry out. Hashem hears and remembers.
Did he forget? That always bothers me.
Excellent. Okay. That's going to be one of our issues. We're going to have to, like, what happened in the interim. But what seems to be being said over here is that they're calling out and crying out because of the difficulty of the labor. God hears, remembers his covenant, and then we have that last verse, and somehow sees and knows. Yeah. And that's what's being said. They're calling out, he hears, he now knows. I guess you would say it was like a three-step thing. Right? He cry, he hears and remembers what's going on, and now he knows. Okay.
Difference between outcry and moaning?
Good. So we have two different phrases used. We have moaning. We have an outcry. Excellent. That's a point that we'll need to clarify. What other points need clarification in these verses? Adina, you just mentioned one. Let's just go right to the end. That last whole verse is difficult. What does it mean, God saw the children of Israel and God knew? I mean, at so many levels.
He knew it was time.
Okay, you're already answering, which is fine.
Well, it really wasn't time because it was...
And it really wasn't time, as we'll see. Correct. So why is he suddenly seeing, and what does it mean that he saw them? That, I mean, to say that he knew is a little bit easier. That phrase is easier. He knew. You could say that he knew things needed to be done. We could deal with that. He saw them? It's a funny phrase, that he saw them. Okay, we'll have to deal with that. What other questions do we have to deal with in these psukim? Okay, the remembering and the forgetting. Yeah. Excellent.
In the beginning, the struck me as something we don't see often.
Excellent. What is the reference of these many days? Good. Okay, there's one more major thing that's here that we haven't touched on yet. It's actually more obvious.
The king of Egypt died.
Excellent.
We haven't touched on
that. Good. What about that? Mm-hmm. You're adding more. What does the verse actually say?
It happened.
Okay. What's the reference relevance of that? What does the verse tell us about that? Now, you're so familiar with the story that you're missing the obvious question here, which is fine. I missed it many.
They didn't ask for God's help until they started having to work hard.
Well, you're making an assumption,
okay,
which is an assumption you're making because we all know the story. But there's if you were to show this to somebody who doesn't know the story, they would ask a very obvious question.
Well, we don't know. I mean, they could have been working hard all along. So, what does the fact that the king died have to do with anything?
Right. It's just we know that they've been working hard until this point. This is already the beginning of the third chapter.
Right.
Moshe's already had to flee. We already know that because he was already involved in all the troubles that they had. He tried to break up the fights of the Midian beating up on the Jews. So we know that there's already trouble for them. That the Torah describes clearly in the very beginning, Vayimaru es chayehem ba'avodah kashah, the Egyptians made their life miserable with difficult labor that's going on. And now you tell me, during those many days, the king died, and the children of Israel groaned because of the work, and they cried out. What in the world does that have to do with the king dying? What should have been the reaction when the king died?
Hooray!
Right? Exactly. Right? The king has been causing them all this trouble. Vayimoru ruas chayehem. They have made their life bitter, difficult, with difficult labor, hard tasks, avodas parach. And now the Torah says, and the king died. It doesn't say, and there was a new king. It just says, during those days the king died, and therefore the Jewish people cried out. Why are they calling out and crying out? Because he died. Well, what's the relevance? Why is that a bad thing that he died?
Maybe they're scared of the unknown. They knew him.
Okay, now, that's an excellent suggestion. But is the question clear?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? No? I feel like in a class of size, I can wait till I have agreement from everybody involved.
Well, I mean, you're just asking why that they were upset that the king died, that Pharaoh died.
Yeah, I would have wanted to have said, just leave that whole phrase out. It was during those many days, it's been horrible years of burden and difficulty, the Jewish people cried out, Shem heard, remember the covenant, and sent Moshe to save them. It seems what's precipitating this whole story. The Torah seems to be giving us this piece of information. This is what started everything.
Well, we know from later on that Hashem wanted to prove to everyone his supremacy. In other words, he pitted himself against Paro.
Okay.
His supremacy. So, is it possible that the people were confused? In other words, the king was who they looked to as the one that ruled their life. Now he's gone, and so they're crying out to God.
The Jewish people?
Mm-hmm.
And because he died, that's why they're calling out?
Yeah, because before that, he was like, they couldn't see beyond that. He was the one who ruled their life.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. Okay.
I'm also wondering.
Possible, we'll see.
Is this the first time that he's referred to as the king of Egypt? Other times it's always been
Pharaoh. Just Pharaoh. I haven't gone through. He's certainly been referenced as Pharaoh a couple of times.
Here's another king of Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in verse 8. Yes. Yeah. Also, you have a new king arose over Egypt. He's not Joseph.
Yeah,
okay, so the main thing is we have to deal with, let's summarize, we have to deal with what's the reference of the many days, what time frame are we referring to? Why is the death of the king of Egypt the galvanizing force of the children crying out? Apparently, they only cried out, which started the process of Hashem hearing him, which started the process of his remembering his covenant, which opened up his eyes so that he saw them. All of that funnels back, according to the Pasuk, to the death of the king of Egypt. What does the death of the king of Egypt have to do with anything? That all this, it should have had the opposite effect, as Zina said. They should have been happy. The person who caused them all their trouble just died. And then we'll have to deal with the two different languages of their calling out, why he specifically remembers his covenant now, and then what that last Pasuk is, what does it mean that he saw, and what does it mean that he knew? Okay. Let's start with the type. It was during those many days. From the Farshim learned as follows. The Ramban and others say, do you have any idea how long Moshe was in Midian for? How long was it? The Torah describes in the previous verse, right before this Pasuk, Chaf Bez, right before that, Moshe flees to Midian. He eventually sees a burning bush and he heads back to Mitzrayim to redeem the Jewish people. The Ramban writes, be surprised. How many? How much time do you think elapsed?
Well, he was old when he went out of Egypt.
Was 120.
I wish
it was 120.
He was old when he took the people. I don't know, 70 years?
It had been in his 70s, that's right.
So you are correct. It's something which when you stop and you think about it, you can figure out. Moshe was 80 years old when he stood before Paro. How old was he when he left Egypt? So we don't know exactly, but the Torah says that Moshe grew up and went out to see his brothers. And immediately after that happened, he had to run for his life. So the Ramban writes he was probably 12 or 13 when he went out to see them. Maybe he says he was up to 20, but for sure not more than that. Which means that he was in Midian, or at least outside of Egypt, for 60 years. Hard to imagine. When you stop and you think about that, that means Moshe, this person who the Jewish people had a prince in the palace. Whether or not they all knew that, or they didn't know that, certainly at some point they knew that, at least when he had to flee. And one of theirs was in the palace. 60 years goes by, and they don't hear from him. 60 years goes by, and he's living out somewhere else, not in the land of Egypt. Moshe himself is in this exile away from his people for a significant amount of time. Says Ramban, that's what this pasuk is referring to. Vayi vayamim harabim was during those many, many years, during this time that Moshe is gone in Midian. Finally, after all of these years, vayomos melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, dies. Now, the Ramban and the Midrashim are going to deal with the problem we raise of what does the death of the king have to do with their crying out to God. It should have been just the opposite effect, where they're finally relieved of the burden of his presence. So the Ramban suggests as follows as far as pshat goes, the simple meaning of the pasuk. Why would they cry out more because of his death? So the Ramban says very much what Elaine wanted to suggest, that the prior king, they knew what they had. They knew what they were getting. When this king died, there's a glimmer of hope that maybe things will be better. Maybe now things will change. Says the Ramban, Mina kol ha-ne'ovdim, the custom of people who are enslaved, people who are subjugated to someone else's rule, especially if it's a wicked, evil person, says the Ramban, Hoyu mitzapim u'mechakim liyomo, so they wait and they yearn for the day of his death. When will this finally end? When will this finally be over? V'kasher ro'u shemeis ha'melach, and when they saw that he died, he'onchu me'od mimloch adam chanof marshiyah min harishon, they groaned out of fear, you know, the next one's going to be even worse than the first one. They said, "Avda tikvaseinu nigzareinu lano." It's even our hope, the glimmer of hope that things are going to be better, is gone, because now that this one is gone, it's possible that even that the second one is going to be even worse than the first one. And therefore, they groaned out of the death. What eventually they had sort of given up. This is, they've accepted the reality of their existence based on the rule of the first. But now that the first one has died, and there's a possibility that things will get better, they groaned out of it being even worse. Yeah.
But it says here twice, they groaned because of the work.
Good.
And their outcry because of the work.
Doesn't fit his pshat.
Right.
Good. Okay, now what the Ramban is trying to do is work out pshat. Why would it be that the death of the king would cause them to groan? So he suggests because now that he's died, they gave up hope that things will ever get better. They'd always had hope that maybe it would get better, and now they finally gave up. The Maral brings that Chazal saw a deeper level. They weren't satisfied with that simple meaning. It could be because of the question you raised. He raises another issue that it doesn't say that someone new came and made it worse for them. Why should they assume that the second one's going to be worse than the first one? We don't have any indication in the actual Pasuk, just after his death, that the next one's going to be worse than the first one. So the sages saw in this verse something else. They saw an entirely different meaning of why their groans were stimulated by the death of the paro. Rashi quotes it. If you look at Rashi, it's in the first column, three lines down. Vayomos melech Mitzrayim nitzara. He was struck with tzaras. That was great.
Did we all look it up?
Yeah. Now, what I've been trying to do until this point was create the context why the sages are looking for something, why they were not satisfied with the literal meaning of he died. A, they can't find, what does his death have to do with their groans? They should have been overjoyed. The Ramban suggests, well, maybe it was because they thought it was now going to get worse. Where's the indication that things were going to be worse? Maybe they would actually get better. Just because he died, why should that cause more of a groan? So the sages could not find any link between the death of Paro and things somehow being worse without any other information. So what they said, doesn't mean a literal death. It means tzaras. The Gemara says in Maseches Nedarim that there are four people who are considered dead. Someone, the Gemara lists all four, which is not relevant. One of the four is someone who has tzaras. I think someone who is poor, someone who...
deaf or what?
Who is deaf, yes. Yeah. One of the four is someone who has tzaras. So the Chazal saw, well, since that's a person who's considered dead, it must mean when the Torah said that he had died, doesn't mean a literal death, it means he was struck with tzaras. And as Chazal continued, v'hayashoychet tinoikes Yisrael v'roychet bedamam. The doctors of his time had told him that his only cure was to bathe in Jewish blood. So he used to take Jewish babies, and he would kill them, and he would take their blood to bathe in it. And the sages saw, that's the reference to Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim. The king died. He had tzaras. His death and tzaras are synonymous in the words of the sages, and that's why the Torah would refer to him as having died. Why is that a stimulus for their greater calls and cries? Because the fact that he now had tzaras, he was now murdering their children and bathing in their blood. That's how Chazal understood from this pasuk. Why, by the way, is someone who has tzaras considered to be dead? So it's a whole shmuz unto itself. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Rosh Hashiva from the Mir, in the earlier half of the 1900s, he writes that the people listed that the sages say, the people who are considered like that, they're cut off from society. They have no connection with other people, no ability to give and bestow their kindness and generosity to someone else. And when you're separated from human contact and social connection, you're considered like as if you're dead. And a person with tzaras is removed from the camp. For the week that he has tzaras, he's on the outside. He's on the out, and therefore he has no connection with people, and that's one of the reasons why he's considered as if he's dead. But that's simply just parenthetical as to why the sages use that term as if he's dead.
We were just learning yesterday about, I don't know how to say it in Hebrew, Jephthah's daughter.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, it's the same idea. He locked her up,
yeah.
And she was separated from. And so it says she, you know, he may not have really killed her.
Uh-huh, but that's where we use the same reference, because being separated. Good. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Good.
Now, what the sages have done with this is they've answered one problem, but they've opened up another. The problem that they're addressing is, what does the death of Paro have to do with their crying out? So that's addressing it by saying his death doesn't mean death, it means tzaras. And the fact that he now had tzaras is he was murdering Jewish babies to bathe in their blood. And that would answer the question sufficiently as to why was there a greater cry now with his death. Because now that the king had tzaras, it furthered their problems, because now they were murdering all of their babies and bathing in their blood. What it doesn't answer, what it raises, is a separate problem. It's the same problem that Dina had with the Ramban's approach, the more simple meaning of he died and they groaned because their glimmer of hope was squashed. Why does the verse describe their crying out? Seems to make very clear why they're calling out.
Their work,
correct. It says it twice in the pasuk, Vayeyanchu v'nei Yisrael min ha'avodah. Vayizak, who they groaned because of their work and called out. Vata'al shavasam elo elokim min avodah, and their outcry because of the work went up to Hashem. If we're going to read the pasuk the way the sages want to read it, the way Chazal see that what's going on in the death of Paro is really being struck with tzaras, why are they calling out more now than they were 10 minutes ago? No? Why are they calling out more now than they were 10 minutes ago, based on the pasuk?
The blood thing?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, right? Yeah. In other words, the death of Paro is a reference to the fact that he now has tzaras and he's murdering their children to bathe in their blood. If that is the introduction that the Torah gives to this entire series of psukim, it would seem like that is what's stimulating their call, that's what's stimulating their cry. But the verse implies, why are they crying out? Because of the work. That didn't change. That's always been there. The work has been constant since the very first psukim of the parsha. When the parsha opens up, two chapters earlier, they vayimaru eschai, they embittered their lives and made them work very hard. That's been a constant. What's changed now in causing them to cry out, in causing Hashem to hear, in causing the mechanisms of the redemption to be put into place, what's changed is the added insult of, they're taking my children to bathe in their blood.
I don't see that in the parsha.
Huh? Which part aren't you seeing?
The bathe in the blood.
Right. That is where the sages saw the reference of, and he died.
So they that's how they interpreted it.
Right. Because he died, they were not willing to say meant a literal death, because that has no bearing on the story. Who cares that he died? Why are they crying out because he died? So they they understood his death was really a reference to one of the four people who are called dead.
Right.
Someone who has tzaras, and the healing mechanism that the Egyptian died, this is what they're saying, it's not explicit in the verse, the healing mechanism for someone who had tzaras, the doctors told him, was to bathe in Jewish blood.
How do we know that?
It might be somewhere that I don't know.
So but this is accepted interpretation?
This is an accepted piece of Agadata, the sage's interpretation, reading into the word, yeah.
Okay. But that
even quoted in Rashi.
If you hold that, then it's still, in other words, this is what happened. They cried out because of the Paro's bathing in children's blood. And we still have to deal with the work. The work is still there.
Correct.
So maybe, in other words, maybe you could say that previous to that time, these things happened. In the many days he died, they groaned, or whatever they did, because of what was happening to their children. But they weren't actually, like, hopeless, just without any hope at all, until the grinding work went on and on. With the work, they cried, and God heard them then. They weren't hopeless yet until the work. And when they were hopeless and cried out, he heard them.
Okay, so the Maral says not exactly that approach, but a similar type of approach. The Maral basically said, you're already answering the question, which is fine. I just want to summarize. So we have here, summarizing where we're up to before we get to the answer. So the way the sages saw it, the death was a reference to the Tzaras, that opens up a separate question of, the Pasuk seems to imply that their cry was because of the work, not because of the new added element of the death of their children. So this question is asked on Rashi. And the Maral's explanation is, Michael Eleanor wants to suggest that in fact there were two things. And he goes through the details. I don't want to deal with that right now. Working through the puzzle, that there are in fact two separate cries. You can see in the language that there are several groans and crying outs which are taking place in this pasuk. So the Maral says it's very simple. They are actually both there. And they're both true. There was an added element of the crying out now because of the death of their children and they're being bathed, Paro bathing himself in their blood, plus the regular cry of the work. What then the Torah is saying to us is, what changed now, that Hashem is suddenly hearing cries which he had not heard previously. They had always been crying as a result of the work. What's taking place now is the additional cries because of their children, and the two of them together affected a change in his behavior towards us than what we had had previously. So far, so good? What is this added element that caused that change? So the Maral explains as follows. There are two aspects of the Sheba, two aspects of the servitude that the Jewish people were in at this time, that these two things represent. The crying out from the children represents a certain level of achzorios, of, I'm just blanking on the word, of cruelty. There's a certain level of cruelty involved with the children, more than what we had had before. Cruelty in itself doesn't demand a redemption. Cruelty doesn't demand being made free. Cruelty only demands stopping the pain. The servitude, being subject to somebody else's rule, the antidote for that is being freed, being taken out of Mitzrayim. So there were two things going on. They were slaves. The servitude itself of being slaves, the response to that would have to be, now you are free, which is being taken out of Mitzrayim. But they weren't ready for that. They didn't deserve that. It wasn't happening. When the added element of the cruelty happens, the cruelty itself certainly doesn't demand a redemption. The cruelty just demands a stoppage of whatever source that's causing you that pain. But when you have such intense cruelty, what it arouses is the feeling of the sympathy, the empathy, the rachmanus that Hashem had on the Jewish people because of that level. The two of them together, says the Maral, said, now it's time. The level of the rachmanus that Hashem had because of the cruelty of the children, that level of cruelty aroused his rachmanus, but that didn't have to create a redemption, it only had to stop the cruelty. But together, then, with the fact that they've been in the servitude and crying out for that for so long, so then once the rachmanus was aroused, the response then went for both and addressed the redemption as well. This idea, which I don't have to spend too much time on, but I want to introduce it because it's a theme that the Maral discusses much throughout the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the two aspects of stopping the pain and redemption. Those are two separate concepts which, when we go through the what we're thankful for, what we give praise to Hashem for over the course of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the two aspects of the Dam Milah, the Dam Pesach, there was the sacrifice that the Jewish people had to do, plus the Bris Milah that the Jewish people did before the left. There were a lot of different aspects of the redemption of the Geula, and the Maral weaves a thread throughout all of them. There is one, stopping the pain, and then two, actually taking them out and giving them their freedom. Those are two separate elements, and he sees already the beginning of that within these three verses, which bridge the suffering to the introduction of to Moshe at the burning bush and the beginning of the process. The Torah says it all started when the king died. That somehow was a link that changed what had been going on for 80 years while Moshe was away. Nothing happened. There's no burning. He's been there for 80 years. Only now is he introduced in the burning bush in the next couple of psukim. What changed over this 80-year period or 60-year period while Moshe was away? The king died. Who cares if the king died? Why is that a bad thing? No, what that means, the sages saw, is there was a new level of cruelty being displayed by the Egyptians. And when there was a new level of cruelty, to that, something had to be stopped. The level of Rachmanus, the level of Rachamim that was aroused within Hashem at that level of cruelty, said, I need to step in. And then in conjunction with the cries that they had as well from the servitude, so not only was he going to stop in and just stop the pain, he was going to step in and affect the entire Geula as well. How does that sit with you?
The wording always makes me, I mean, I know not really, but it sounds like Hashem was away for a bit of time.
Was away?
Like,
yeah.
Like on vacation.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I want to make sure we get to that. Yes, that is 100% correct. 100% correct and accurate. Okay, but let's move on to the next Pupsukim. Was that, I'm okay, moving on, that was clear? Okay, Vayishmo Elokim es Nakasam, Hashem heard their cries, Vayizkura Elokim es Briso es Abraham es Yitzchak ve es Yaakov. Now this is going to introduce us to Lane's problem. So he hears their cry. He hears their cry and he remembers his covenant. So it seems like until this point that covenant had been forgotten, as if he was simply allowing this to take place and was not stepping in. I think we even spoke about it in this forum once. Probably was about 2 years ago. What he heard was their cry. Torah doesn't describe the words of the tefillah, simply their cry from the pain of the cruelty that they were experiencing is what he heard. And the Chazal elsewhere write that that's one of the languages of tefillah. Sometimes a cry of pain without any words attached to it is a form of tefillah. It's a form of supplication before Hashem, simply the groan to whomever it is that can help you. I don't even have the ability to put it into words, but simply crying out in pain is in itself a form of a tefillah. That seems to be what Hashem heard and remembered his covenant that he had with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now remember, when he made that covenant, he said that they were going to be in servitude for 400 years. So the fact that they were suffering is not anything new. That was part of the plan. He had promised Abraham, they will suffer, but I will redeem them. So the fact that he seems to be allowing it to take place unto a certain level was part of the plan. There was part of a process that we needed to go through. Why we needed to go through that also is a separate discussion. It seems to be a little bit as a part of a tikkun, a fixing of Avraham's lack of emunah. Right when he said, how do I know that my children are going to enter into the land of Israel? It was in response to that. Chazal say that we were subject to the level of servitude. There's a process that we needed to go through as a people through the levels of servitude. But now the Egyptians had crossed the line. Something had happened where it was more than just servitude. There was this added level of cruelty. Now he heard our cries, remembered his covenant, and said, it's time I'm going to redeem them. The Ramban actually writes over here, you answered on the next pasuk. So let me. I will hold off on that comment. Just by the way, one more parenthetical thought. Why was this so much more cruel than what they've been doing until now? Throwing babies into the Nile, the male children. Why is bathing in their blood so much more cruel than the subjects, the horrible cruelty they had to suffer until now? So the Maral suggests, which is really a fascinating insight. The Maral suggests the cruelty of throwing a child into the river is a one-time, one-moment cruelty. Take the child, and then the child's gone. It's horrible. Cruelty that's unimaginable for a mother to see that happen. But both for the Egyptian perpetrator and for the Jewish mother, it's only in front of them for a moment. And then it's just the pain. To bathe in the blood of a child, it's always there in front of you. It continues to be there. Both for the Egyptian who is perpetrating the cruelty and for the Jewish mother watching what's going on, it's still there. And the level of cruelty in that, he writes, is far worse than the level of cruelty where the act is a one-time act and then it's not in front of me anymore. I'm left with the pain, but I'm not left with the vision of something tangible to hold on to that's expressing that cruelty. And that, he writes, is why there's such a difference. This level of cruelty was far worse than anything before, which is, I don't know if you share, I thought it was a fascinating insight just in terms of our own, the practices of the cruelties we experience, the difference when you have to suffer with something and it stays with you, it's still there, makes it so much worse than when it happened, and I'm still suffering from the pain, but I don't have the constant reminder of whatever it was that took place, literally staring me in the face. I'm still suffering from it right in front of me. You know, someone stole your car, and so it's gone. Another thing is, they live next door, they're driving it, and I have no recourse. I can't, they're stronger, bigger, I can't deal with it. I have to watch someone, like someone took my house. How much worse is it if I now have to like live in a shack down the block and I have to walk past my house that they have somehow finagled? That's so much worse because I now have to always see it. It's a far worse, more powerful level of cruelty than just when something happened and I have to move on. Okay, that's all.
I was going to say, and girls too, where the...
Right, this was also added to the girls' aspect. In other words, the boys were the only ones thrown into the river, not the girls. 100%. That is also correct. Okay. This final difficult, Vayar Elohim es b'nei Yisrael, Vayed Elohim, so Hashem saw, and he knew. Difficult phrase. So the Ebn Ezra writes, the Ramban quotes, it's on the most simple level, what it means is that he saw the afflictions and the cruelties that the Egyptians were doing, which were open and obvious. Vayed, and he knew even the ones they were doing that nobody else could possibly know. He knew even the things that the Egyptians were doing, which were not open, revealed, and obvious to anybody. No one else would know what's going on. But even the things that they were doing behind closed doors, he knew those also. That, says the Ebn Ezra, is the simple meaning of what does it mean that he saw and he knew. He saw the things that were obvious to be seen, and he even knew the things which were not obvious. The sages, as quoted by Rashi, and the Ramban brings it as well, saw another level here as well. And Rashi writes, beautiful language, and if you want to follow, it's the second to last line from the bottom in the first column. Vayeda Elokim Nason Aleihem Leiv. He literally placed upon them his heart, paid attention. Velo He'elim Einov. And he did not hide his eyes. So what it means that he saw and he knew is that, as you're saying, it seems as if he like went on vacation and he wasn't paying, yet now he was paying attention. Nason Aleihem Leiv, he literally placed his heart on it, on the matter, paid attention, and did not cover or hide his eyes from it. So the Ramban writes over here, this is a reference, says Ramban, that in the beginning he was ma'astir panav mehen. He hid his face. As we say, the biggest curse that we have in the Torah is when Hashem says, if you treat me in a certain way, I will hide my face from you. And therefore, it's as if they're being consumed, and he's not paying attention. And now that he heard their cries, now that the level of cruelty had been bumped up because of the cruelty of Paro's death, really, i.e., Saras, now he heard their cries. That means to say he was no longer hiding his face from them, and he knew all of the pain and suffering that was taking place. Says Ramban, why does the Torah express this in so many different phrases, so many different words? Their outcry because of the work went up to Hashem. He heard their moaning. He remembered his covenant. He saw them. He knew. So many different phrases, says the Ramban, of aspects which are somehow affecting Hashem, touching him in a way, how in Kaviyachas we can speak, that now he was ready to redeem him. The Ramban says, you need to know this. He'erich ha'kosuv lahazkir ta'anos rabos begu'ulos. On the Torah expands itself at great length to speak of many different reasons for the redemption. Ki afal pi shenishlam hazman shenigzor aleim, even though the time had come, lo hayu ru'uyim lihigol, they were not ready, they were not fit, they did not deserve to be redeemed. And therefore Hashem created a situation in which various different things would come before him, which would allow him to redeem them, even though they didn't deserve it, they didn't. The time had come where they needed to go, but, says the Ramban, they weren't ready, they weren't fit. And therefore, it was until those things, it was only because of their cry that he accepted and heard their tefillah, their prayers, with great mercy. The implication here is, he doesn't say this explicitly, but it seems that way to me, that the way the Ramban understands this is, the death of Paro, which the sages understood to mean his tzaras, and his subsequent requirement to bathe in their blood, which caused such a new level of cruelty for the Jewish people that they called out. And he heard that cry, because this was a different kind of cry than what had been happening before. It sounds, mipnei hatza'aka kibel tefilosim berachamon, he needed a reason to redeem them. They didn't deserve it. The time had come, and the horrible pain and suffering which they were going through caused them to cry, caused them to hear the cries and set the process into motion, because that's what needed to happen to be redeemed. It sounds a little bit like the whole thing was orchestrated that Paro, why was Paro suddenly given tzaras? That's the third of the saying. What did he do to get tzaras? It sounds a little bit like that was orchestrated by Hashem in order to create a situation in which we find this all very often throughout Jewish history, where Hashem yearns for the tefillah of the Jewish people, yearns to hear us cry out for him, yearns for that aspect of the redemption to come, says if you're not doing it on your own, and you're not deserving of this on your own, I will have to create a circumstance in which you will eventually call out to me. And we have seen this play over and over and over again throughout Jewish history, where situations are created in which the Jewish people will have to call out, in which he can hear our prayers, Barachamim, and set the processes of redemption into motion. We shouldn't need it. There's always it shouldn't have to come to that. But the reality is, that's just the way that we seem to have the practice that we have as the Jewish people. That's when we call out best, when we are suffering and crying. But it seems almost that that's what the Rabban is saying, as this bridge of psukim leading up to the introduction of the burning bush, which is going to be the very next pasuk or two, that that was all precipitated over these many years, over these 60 years, it was that event which really brought that about.
I'm thinking, like, how many children does it take to give enough blood to bathe in? Ugh. And how often do you have to do it?
As far as that goes, that understanding, medrash, whatever,
yeah,
seems to me that you have to figure that out from Vayahi, because it didn't have to say that. It could have just said, and during those days it happened, the king died, so on and so forth. But the fact that it says Vayahi, then we have to ask, why is it there? Otherwise, we might not have to ask that question.
Are you asking just on the word Vayahi, or the whole phrase?
The fact that it starts with something that already tips us off, that something bad is happening.
See, because the word Vayahi always connotes something negative.
Yeah.
Okay, you're coming.
So otherwise, it could have just said, and it happened during the many days, the king died. No. But because we're tipped off that something really bad is happening, so then we have to ask that question about the king dying. There has to be something in there that says that. But the other thing that I'm thinking also is that we just translate the word remember. I mean, it's a much more important word than just to say remembered. We don't really know what it totally means. Zachor.
Yeah.
We don't.
Right.
So, in other words, like, he remembered, like, maybe he forgot about it. It doesn't necessarily have to have that meaning, that God remembered, like maybe he forgot. But it has some other more significant meaning when it says he remembered. Something is happening in the world because God is taking cognizance of something happening. That's just a very... I always thought that was...
You're 100% no, that the Torah describes many times Hashem remembering things.
Right. But it's than like we remember to do the laundry.
There's no such thing as Hashem forgetting.
Right.
So,
exactly. So he needed the people to cry out to him in order to put all of this in motion. And as soon as they cried out to him, I think that's such an interesting point, that the minute he cried out to him, something started happening in Midian, and Moshe Rabbeinu is now going to come back. He's not going to come back until this happens.
That is correct. Now, the last point that I want to say, so what you have here is they're crying out, Hashem hearing, remembering, and then the way the Torah describes it is he saw and he knew. And as we saw from Rashi, it meant he placed his heart on the Jewish people and no longer hid his eyes from them. He was at one point in the process of Hester Panim, which he hid his face from them, and now he was paying attention and seeing what was going on. That's how Rashi understands. And says Rav Shlomo Volbe, great Mashkiach in Israel, passed away 4 or 5 years ago, so he writes, you see that the mechanisms of Geula, the mechanisms of the redemption, immediately kick in as soon as what happens? He starts paying attention. The difference was, there's a chain of reactions here that happen. Jewish people suffer additional cruelties. They call out. Their calling out causes him to be cognizant of their struggles, pay attention to what's going on, see, no longer hide his eyes from their issues, and immediately from there, the mechanisms of Geula begin. So he writes, we were all endowed with a Tzelem Elokim. Human beings were given this aspect of being created in the image of Hashem. So he writes that has many impacts, many effects, whatever exactly that means. But what that means is that the same traits that Hashem has, we also have as part of our genetic makeup. It's part of our spiritual being. We share Bitzelem Elokim. There's some aspect of godliness within us. And he writes, this trait is so critical. The ability simply to pay attention, to open your eyes and see, and be no sane lave, to place your heart on the issue, is the key to our midas tovas, being able to do things. Is once we see something, we're able to address it, we're able to work on it. But the midah of chesed, the true key to the midah of chesed, is first acknowledging, being aware of what's going on around you, of who needs help, how and why, and when. And that point, he writes, is really one of the things that we most often miss, is we're simply not cognizant, we're not aware of the issues that surround us, of who needs the type of help that they need. Once we're aware of it, then we have another means of actually being able to put it into place, of being able to accomplish that which needs to be accomplished. But the greater impediment is not even being aware of what is going on. And this midah of vayar Elokim vayeda, he saw and he knew. No sin lave, he placed his heart upon it. Lo he'elim enof, he didn't hide his eyes. That ability to be mizbone, to actually pay attention and contemplate and see the things around you, that which needs to be done, is really the key for all of our midos, especially the midah of chesed, being able to understand and be able to act upon that which is going on around us. So he puts that the midah of chesed is really rooted in the midah of das. It's really a mental thing more than a physical thing of first being able to know and acknowledge that which is going on. And he derives that from here as well, which is what switch is being cognizant of the fact. And now that he was cognizant, so immediately upon being cognizant, the geula starts. It hadn't started when he was, so to speak, hiding his face. As soon as he sees, so then everything kicks in. That's how we learned. Those are these three verses. How the sages understood this as the bridge between the servitude and the beginning of the redemption, the process of the additional cruelty of the king having tzaras, as the sages understand, and the Jewish people calling out and crying, and Hashem hearing, and therefore being impacted by their cries of rachamim, and then in addition to the cries from the servitude, together of having to stop the cruelty and free them from their servitude, beginning the mechanisms of the geula. May we see the next one speedily in our day. Okay. All right, a wonderful afternoon.